Let's Hear for the Girls is brought to you in partnership with Speak Studios and Speak Boise.
Speak Boise is a community-driven studio space where voices from all walks of life can speak and be heard.
You can find them on Instagram and Facebook at Speak Studios and Speak Boise at their website, speakstudios.com. Speak Studios,
speak and be heard.
Let's Hear for the Girls is brought to you by Instant Imprints. Promote better with Instant Imprints. Instant Imprints are Boise's visual communication experts and your place for everything you need to promote your business, club, school, or group. As a locally owned business, Instant Imprint specializes in making your organization more visible with custom brand apparel, embroidery, promotional items, print services, and wide format printing for signs, as well as banners and vehicle graphics. You want better ways to get noticed? Visit Instant Imprints at instantimprints.com Boise or call 208 Imprint. That's 208-467-7468. Yeah.
Hi.
Hi, Erin.
Well, this is, we're filming two, God, why do I always say that?
Because you think you're a star. Well, to be fair, there are multiple cameras in the room. And ring lights.
And
ring lights, so it's appropriate.
Yeah, appropriate. But we are recording two episodes back to back.
Yeah, because you're going to be gone
next
week.
I'm going to be gone. So, you know, listen to our last episode about what we've been watching.
Should we talk about something else just real quick, just to give people a little bit more knowledge about us?
Do it.
I'm trying to
lay it on me.
I found a new love. So everyone knows we love Panera. Nine times out of ten, I come in here with Panera.
Yeah, you do.
My new love though, are you looking? That's not Panera.
Well, what is it?
That's that little pizza place inside the building where we record.
Oh, I
got a soda from there.
You betcha.
My new obsession is Albertsons Marketplace. Their salads are fucking bomb.
The $8 salads?
Yes. Have you had one?
You just talked about this
I didn't ask you. Have you had one?
No, but what, like, are we talking like chef salad, chop salad?
Okay.
What
so
do we got?
They have like some of their own, you can create your own.
Great.
And then they have this own like inspirational ones that are from different places in the world. They have some classics like a Cobb and a chef salad.
Great.
And they had like recently I had like an Indian one. I had a Moroccan salad.
Oh my
They're
God.
Huge. Like fuck Panera. I'm sorry, Panera. I didn't say that Panera, but fuck Panera.
Yeah.
Because they're so like you don't get enough at Panera and you know that. That's why you spend $25 at Panera because you order a salad and a soup and a sandwich and a cookie. These salads are like, I wish y'all could see me. They're huge. They're so big.
God.
I split them in half and I have another one the next day.
Shit, I need to start doing that.
Yeah, $8.99.
Do you think they have
$7.99?
They probably have them on the Broadway Albertsons.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I'm gonna take a gander.
Go try it. It's worth
it.
And then just go get like a little baguette from the little bakery, and you're good.
You're good to go.
A little fresca.
Wow.
A little. What do you like? A bubbly. I know you like a bubbly.
I do. I do like a bubbly. Or really any sparkling water. Yeah. I'm really an equal opportunity. Consumer well, there. I did have a question for you.
Okay.
Oh, shoot. I kind of forgot what it was. Oh, okay. So a celebrity that I follow on Instagram, Florence Pugh, she is amazing. She was in Midsommar. She is in the upcoming Black Widow movie.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes.
You have all heard our thoughts on Black Widow's Scarlett Johansson. Listen to any other episode and you'll know how we feel about it. Are you still going to watch this movie? Are you looking forward to it at all? Or are we watching it simply out of obligation's sake?
Oh, I'm watching it.
Are you excited to watch it?
Yeah, kind of.
Okay.
I'm probably going to watch it with a bunch of gays. So recently I made like this new like social circle, which I'm really super excited about because it's all gay men. We watched Cruella de Vil together and we've been like hanging.
Cute.
We've been doing like little activities together and they mentioned like, oh, we should watch Black Widow together. So I'll probably go watch it with them.
Nice.
Yeah. And then we will probably watch it in theaters. And so
that's a good idea.
I'm excited to watch it just because I miss Marvel. Like I haven't seen a Marvel movie in theaters in a while. This will be the first Marvel movie for starting off the next phase, like technically.
Yeah.
So I'm excited. So I'm going to watch it. I don't think I'll like it. I don't see the purpose of it. But hey, if we can get Scarlett Johansson, Adam, my view for a bit, then
that would be
I'll watch it just to kill her.
Yeah, I getcha.
Yeah,
I'm excited to see it just because I'm such a big fan of Florence Pugh and David Harbour and Rachel Weisz.
I love me some Rachel Weisz.
We love her. Maybe Seth or Scope and I will watch that in theaters.
You should do it.
Okay.
Well, here we go.
The film that we are talking about today is The Woman in the Window. Okay.
Oh, God.
You have seen this movie advertised. It is on Netflix. It is a Netflix original, I believe.
Yes.
And it just came out this year. So if you're like, that sounds familiar, it's because it's being advertised to you, probably.
Yes. So before you watch this, please go watch it, because I don't have the capacity to explain.
We will not explain this.
It
doesn't deserve it, first of all. But we'll get to that. But yeah, so this is your beep, boop, boop, pause, go watch.
And come back.
Welcome back. Okay, so let's get into the basics, shall we? So this film is directed by Joe Wright. We know Joe Wright from a lot of stuff.
Yes.
Pride and Prejudice, Atonement, Anna Karenina. He does those period pieces, all very female driven.
Yes.
Right? A lot of them.
With Natalie Portman's twin.
Yes, with Natalie Portman's twin. And so we know. I was a little surprised to see that Joe Wright had directed this. After I watched the movie, I was like, that's interesting, because I'm used to seeing him in those Keira Knightley period piece movies.
Natalie Portman's twin.
Right. And so next he will direct Cyrano, which is based off Cyrano de Bergerac.
Oh, I want to see that.
Yes, which we
I love that.
We love that, right?
Yeah, I love that. And was like one of my first pieces I memorized in theater.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Throwback.
Yeah.
That film is post-production, so we can be looking forward to that this year or next.
Awesome.
So if you don't know, a little tidbit, the movie Roxanne with Steve Martin is based off of this Cyrano de Bergerac, right? So that's a funny, cute little movie if you ever want to watch it. I think it's Daryl Hannah and Steve Martin. Yes. It was written by Tracy Letts. The screenplay was, and we know Tracy Letts. He wrote August Osage County, a movie that we like a lot.
I really want to rewatch it now.
Because
I really want
to. I'm just going to cut to the fucking chase. I hated this movie. It was trash. And so when I'm seeing that wrote August Osage County,
I want to rewatch that movie just because of that. Because I'm like, wasn't that good?
Because.
Or is it because the actress is in it?
I want to rewatch Osage County.
Yeah.
Because we really like that movie.
Yeah.
It has powerhouse talent.
Yeah. And I think that's the reason why I like that movie, is because the people who are in it. I honestly.
We should do that movie.
Yeah. We should do it next.
Okay. Fine. So Tracy Letts also plays the therapist in this film.
Oh.
He's uncredited, but he plays the therapist, which we see in a couple scenes.
He needs therapy after this.
Shit. I know.
Right.
And then there was a novel written by A.J. Finn. That is what this is based off of. So let's talk about our stars. Okay. Amy Adams is our main character here.
Which we don't have to talk about. You could just go listen to.
I was just going to say, listen to episode 3 of Let's Hear It for the Girls for everything you need to know about Amy Adams.
Look at you.
Yes, but we can see her next, of course, in Dear Evan Hansen this year.
Yikes.
And as Giselle in Disenchanted.
Oh, I'm so excited. Next year.
So at least there's one of them that you'll see, because I know you're so sick of Dear Evan Hansen.
Fuck Dear Evan Hansen.
Can't wait to watch it. And then we have Gary Oldman. We know Gary Oldman from playing Commissioner Gordon in the Chris Nolan Batman film.
He's so good in that.
He's so good. Tinker Tailor, Soldier Spy. He's in The Darkest Hour, where he plays Churchill.
Yes.
Mank, right? That got a ton of Oscar nominations this year.
Yes.
For Mank. And you can see him next in the TV series Slow Horses.
Oh, okay.
And then another quote unquote star of the film is Anthony Mackie, which we see him in literally one scene.
You hear him often.
We hear him often. He has a pretty notable voice. Yes. I would say I could recognize his voice. Gosh. He's a sexy ass voice.
It's just so soothing.
It is soothing.
So good.
What's the first thing you saw Anthony Mackie in? I remember mine. It's like remembering your first love.
I can't remember. That's hard. What was yours?
We Are Marshall. He's one of the football players.
Which one's We Are Marshall?
It's when like the football team gets in a plane accident and then they have to like rebuild the team.
I don't remember that movie. No. Sounds familiar. It's good. I don't remember it.
It's like 2006.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Not bad. Has Matthew Fox from Lost.
Okay.
Yeah. And Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah. I guess like my first thing that I can remember him about. I guess I remember him seeing him in, of course, any Marvel movie. But then like what stood out for me is when he did that Black Mirror episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's when I was like, oh.
He's also an Eagle Eye. Like he's been in a lot of like those government spy type of.
So for the listeners, movies. I'm looking at her like, so you are asking me this question, why?
I don't know.
I don't watch no government spy.
Okay.
Movies.
But he's also obviously the Falcon in the Marvel films.
Yes, that's more of my speed.
Falcon and the Winter Soldier on Disney Plus. He's in We Are Marshall, the Adjustment Bureau, and he's in that TV series Altered Carbon. I've heard of it.
Okay, yeah, I see. That's what I first seen him in. Yeah.
And you can see him next in a film called Signal Hill, which is pre-production right now.
Okay.
And this film also stars Julianne Moore, Jennifer Jason Leigh, and Wyatt Russell as David the Tennant.
Who is Kurt Russell's son, which I did not realize.
But don't they look so much alike now that... Oh,
no.
I see it.
I think Chris Pratt looks more like Kurt Russell for some reason.
Oh, for Guardians of the Galaxy.
Goose. But like when I saw, they look like they could be related. Not his son. Kurt Russell is stunning.
Okay.
And this man is okay.
Well, he's blonde and you know how I feel about it.
Oh,
so
you hate him. You hate him.
Well, not hate.
Despise it.
Just dismiss.
Dismiss. That's
you're dismissed if you're blonde.
You're dismissed.
Let's do our ratings, shall we? Because it definitely matches what I think.
Okay.
So for Rotten Tomatoes, what's our tomato meter for The Woman in the Window? What is it? What do we got? Tomato meter,
right?
Is the critic score percentage.
50.
25. 25. A quarter.
Oh, my God.
Our audience score is...
40.
35.
Okay. Whoa, was there?
And our IMDb score is 5.7, I think is high.
I think it's generous.
It's very generous.
I think it's generous.
That's a liberal estimate.
Ah! Okay, keep going.
What would you rate this movie?
Actually, I would probably say a 5.
Okay.
You're like a what? A 2?
4.3.
I would say a 5. Listen.
Look it. There's so many issues.
Oh my God. I think what the movie does, not even right, but I think what the movie does is it's tapping into something that everybody loves. Everyone loves a whodunit. And everyone loves Alfred Hitchcock. And so like when you combine those two things, like you can watch the movie. You won't watch it again. I'm telling listeners, I wish there was a camera. I'm going to look at a camera that's in this room and I know you can't see it. Listeners, listen. You won't watch this movie again. You'll watch it the first time. And you might have to take breaks and you might have to watch it in a couple days. You'll finish the movie because you'll want to finish it because you want to know who did it. But you won't watch it again.
The only good thing about this movie is it was a tight 130. God. It's 141, but that's, you know, obviously with credits. So like it's
really?
It's,
I thought this movie was way longer.
It puts you out of your misery.
I started the movie. I had a snack. I stopped the movie, went to McDonald's. And came back. And I was like, this movie is still going on.
Wow.
Yeah.
So please give us a quick synopsis of the film, if you wouldn't mind.
Bullshit, bullshit, bullshit.
Bullshit, bullshit, bullshit.
I can't even remember characters' names. You're going to have to help me.
Okay.
Amy Adams' character.
Fox is her last name. Anna Fox.
Anna Fox. Has agoraphobia. Did I say that correctly?
Mm-hmm.
Which means she can't go outside. So she's stuck in the stunning, stunning New York brownstone. My dream.
Yeah.
I got Brooklyn vibes, to be honest. She's like definitely off the island. She's not in Manhattan.
I thought they said Manhattan.
Oh, what did they?
I'm pretty sure.
Or if she is, she's up, upper. She's up.
121st, 48th Street.
48th?
Didn't she say 48?
I thought she said 100 and something. I feel like she's up. If she
is
121st. She's on the island. She's up. Yes.
Oh, 121st Street.
And 24 or something like
that's
that.
That's what it
she's
is.
Up this, she's up
yeah,
the
yeah,
bench.
Yeah. Okay.
She's in New York. Agoraphobia. Cannot go outside. And she is watching her neighbors. So a woman after my own heart. Nosy as fuck.
I love snooping.
Yeah, snooping. And so there's a new family who moves in. Mm-hmm. And she's...
across the street.
Called the Russells.
Yep.
And she's watching them.
Yep.
She meets the son. She meets who she perceives to be the mother.
Mm-hmm.
And so the whole movie kind of is about her trying to process what is happening with these neighbors.
Because she sees something.
And she sees something. Throughout the film, she talks to her therapist who's trying to help her with her balance her medication. clearly she has she's an alcoholic, so she's drinking while she's on her medication.
A lot of drinking.
She has a tenant named David. Was his name? David. Yes, David, who lives in her basement.
Good job. I know. Played by Kurt Russell's son.
Yes. Okay. And so the whole film is just, it's truly a whodunit. She witnesses a murder, and she's trying to figure out who has murdered, what was the mother's name? Julianne Moore's
character. Jane.
Jane. Who murdered Jane Russell? She believes it's the husband.
But who is Jane Russell?
But who is, and the next question is, who is Jane Russell? Because we come to find out that this other woman is actually Jane Russell, who's married to Alfred, was his name? Asteria.
Alistair
Russell.
Wisteria.
I'm giving a really bad synopsis of this because this movie is that terrible.
But that's yeah. It's so bad. Okay, so bad. Like, there's a few different pieces of this film that you kind of have to piece together for yourself because the writing does literally nothing for you. And so, so she meets the son, right? The son comes over and says, "Oh, my mom got you this candle. Here it is." And they talk, and she's like, you know, this. So
child psychologist. She's automatically just attached to the kid.
She's child psychologist. She's in the same moo-moo bathrobe situation. I swear to God, that was a denim moo-moo, by the way. Like, and the movie takes place within like a week, right? A week. And so the son comes over and she's like, "Oh, this sensitive boy, I can tell, blah, 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 blah." Because she hears fighting or whatever, or she sees fighting or something across the street. And so then this woman comes over and it's Julianne Moore. And she says to her, "Oh, you must be Jane Russell." And she responds, "Oh, why do you say that?" She doesn't say, "Yes, she is." Yeah. And so that's the whole mystery of the movie. So at the end, she's thinking, no, she said she was Jane Russell. And then we get back to that scene and it says, "Why do you say that?" Not, yeah. "Yes, I am." That's the whole thing. And I'm like, "Oh my God, that is such a letdown." But she has this great night with Julianne Moore and they have this like fun wine night and like, you know, they talk a bunch. And then she sees she thinks it's Jane Russell, but she sees her get stabbed across the street.
A couple days after
in her home, right? And so she's thinking, "Oh my God, this husband has killed his wife." And so it's kind of this.
And I think it's important that Jane Russell kind of talks about her husband as if she's in an abuse relationship.
Yes.
Or if they're in, there's a lot of tension in the home.
Right.
So there's this conversation of like, "Oh, I might have cheated on him. He's very controlling.
Right.
He's under a lot of pressure."
Right.
So she's automatically creating the scenario for Amy Adams' character. I can't remember her name. Anna. That the marriage isn't all right.
And it's all things that you and I would be like, "That's a red flag. That's a red flag. That's a red flag."
Right.
In those conversations. Right.
And for Anna too, she's perceiving it, I think, as of like, "Well, this is a bonding moment because I'm having the same problems." So she's separated from her husband. She's dealing with this agoraphobia by herself in this home, whereas her husband and her daughter are somewhere else. We aren't told where. So we just hear these kind of either voice conversations on the phone or these kind of voiceovers throughout the scene of them having these conversations as far as like, "How are you doing? You should try and get outside." She's kind of giving them an update about what the neighbors are doing.
And they seem on like good terms.
They seem on like,
it's said that they're separated.
Yes. You don't really know why, but you could tell like she's connecting to the point of like, here are these two women dealing with difficult marriages, trying to raise children.
Right.
I did love the scene when they talked about, our children, we belong to our children. Our children don't belong to us.
Right.
They connect. I will say that was fucking bullshit. I'm like, if a woman comes in my house that I don't know about and she's snooping in my life, I'm not going to be drinking wine, playing card games, playing Uno with a bitch. Like, no, this does not feel right. I'm like, what is going on with this woman that she's telling him all this business and having these connections? Right. That didn't feel right.
To a stranger.
To a stranger.
Literal stranger.
That gets murdered the next day.
Right. And so then we see her get murdered and she's like, "Oh my gosh." And she calls the cops. And then the husband from across the street, Gary Oldman, comes over with his wife, Jane Russell, who's played by Jennifer Jason Leigh. And it's like, she's like, "No, that's not her. That's not her." And so it's kind of this like her struggle to be believed. And it's like, okay, kind of in what we were talking about in the last episode of, is she seeing this through her lens, through the lens of taking, you know, six medications and drinking a bottle of wine every night on them? Is did she really see this happen? Or is this like, you know, she's been in her house for 10 months and she's like perceived this happen. So it's kind of her like struggle to be believed too, because law enforcement comes over and is like, you know, basically like trying to handle the situation. And she's over there.
That was Jennifer Jason Lee.
Yeah, that was Jennifer Jason
Lee. Gosh, she looked terrible in that movie.
Yeah. She's in Atypical on Netflix.
I've seen her in another movie. I see her in Annihilation. I really like her. She did not look good in that movie. That did not look like her.
She's not.
Not in like a bad way. It's just like that movie did not do justice for any of those actors.
No, it didn't. And like Gary Oldman had this like
weird ass accent. What was that? Sorry.
He is British.
Is he?
Isn't he?
I don't think he is.
Shit, now I have to look it up. But he had this like snow white hair and I'm like, is that?
That accent was bothersome. Like, I'm like, they're from Boston. And then Julianne Moore had this like Boston, like, did you watch 30 Rock?
Of course.
Okay, so she had the same Boston accent that she had in 30 Rock.
Oh, Gary Oldman is English.
He is?
Yeah, he was born in London.
Okay, but I didn't understand that accent. It was like this weird, like transcontinental, like it wasn't like pure British. It was like this weird. I didn't understand it. Anyway.
Okay.
Getting back to what you're saying. I'm sorry, long tangent.
No, you're fine.
It is this, again, connecting it back to the movie we just talked about. Right. We need to talk about Kevin. This unreliable narrator, which yes. I love this concept of like watching a film through the eyes of a narrator who you can't trust. And throughout the movie, I think one of the only interesting part is like how they framed the movie, like the cinematography of the movie. Mm-hmm. They really tried to make it this kind of like bizarro, weird film where you're like kind of watching it through her eyes. She's on these drugs that are kind of making her see things. And so in the background, you're always seeing these older black and white kind of noir films. You'll see. She's disoriented. She's kind of drunk. So you always feel like the movie, like when you're watching the movie, you feel like you're drunk. Mm-hmm. You feel like you're high on these drugs. So mm-hmm. I did find that interesting. But I think that was the problem. It's like, because you're so trying to connect with her disease, mm-hmm. her condition, mm-hmm. you don't know what the fuck is going on.
Right.
There's no clear delineation of like what is actually happening. So by the time when you get to the end and you finally realize what happened, you get to the whodunit, you're like, what? Like nothing makes sense.
It makes no sense. And it's such a, that's the thing. The thing that makes me mad about why this movie sucks so much is that it has, this is not, as you said at the beginning of this episode, this is a formulaic story. We've seen it before in a million different ways and it can be done so well.
Yeah. I think, from the jump, this is
toilet.
Have you seen Rear Window?
Of course.
This is Rear Window.
Yeah.
This is Rear Window. This is an Alfred Hitchcock remake, or this is a modern interpretation, which we've seen multiple times, of Rear Window, of like a person who is, some for some reason, either physically and in this case mentally, cannot escape from their home.
Right.
And they're watching the outside world, yeah. Which is a great, I love the idea of like using this film to talk about mental health and like for people with mental health issues, depression, anxiety, agoraphobia, anything, you are trapped within your own physical confinement.
Right.
And so you're watching the outside world happening either around you or to you. So I love this interpretation of like what happens when a person is trapped either.
Right.
You know, I mean, for some
in
reason.
In some way. Right.
Yeah. So I loved it. But I think because it just couldn't get outside of its own way, the movie failed.
And it tried to do a lot too. It tried to pack a lot in.
Oh my gosh.
Like, so if we're looking at, okay, so kind of towards the end of the movie, we see that, okay, this Jane Russell is who she says she is.
Mm-hmm.
And she notices, like, she's downstairs in her tenants. This is like one of the twists of the film, quote unquote. She's downstairs because she hears her cat, right?
Yeah.
The cat is the only good thing about this movie.
Oh my God. I want that cat.
Punch the cat.
I want the best fucking name for a pet. And it's the most terrifying cat. And I want one. That cat scared the shit out of me because it was just
a Persian cat.
I want a Persian cat. I want one.
They're spendy, but okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I want one.
They're spendy to take care of is all I'm saying.
It was gorgeous. I love that little kind of face. And it was,
you know, you have to like clean in between their little wrinkles, right?
I love it.
Okay.
Thanks, cat lady.
Thanks, gang. You're welcome. Just educating. And so she hears the cat. So she goes downstairs and she's like, looks under the bed and the cat's there. And she's like, that's weird. Why are you under here? And because there's like a locked door to the basement. And then she sees an earring.
Yes.
That Julianne Moore AKA the first Jane Russell, yes, not Jane Russell, was wearing. And so the twist is, oh my God, it's the downstairs neighbor.
David.
And then she looks at his pile of mail on the floor and it's like from a parole board. And it's like, oh my God, he's a criminal. So he must have like murdered.
Lazy.
It was so lazy because then it's kind of creating this really dumb bullshit narrative that like you can be on parole for literally 100 things. And you're choosing to think, oh, because he got in a bar fight, then he stabbed a woman?
Right.
Like, whoa. Well, like, why are we going there?
At the end, when he finally confront, like, why is the earring and why is this all happening? Because there's the police are there and fucking Alice are there and the real Jane Russell's there. And, like, David's there all confronting Amy Adams and his character of, like, what is the fuck is wrong with you? Why are you calling the police? Why are you accusing everyone of murder? Because she pretty much says, like, well, David, he's on parole and he assaulted somebody.
He's a criminal.
I found her earring in his room. And he's all like, she came over. We spent the night together. We had sex. She's fucking crazy. Like, yeah. He tells her pretty much just like why she's there.
Yeah, like I had a one night stand with this
woman.
It's
just the way they frame the whole thing. I'm like, they make him look like a fucking like a douchebag. Yeah. They made Jane Russell, the beau Jane Russell's character, I can't remember her real name. They make her look terrible. And it's just like, why? This wasn't necessary.
Well, exactly. So there's two kind of climaxes of the movie.
Yes.
Okay, so let's talk about the first one. So the first one is who killed Julianne Moore's character.
Yes.
Right? And so we find out through a series of very poorly written scenes that it's the son.
Jane, what was her other? I want to figure out her.
Oh,
role
I don't
name.
Know. I don't know.
You keep talking. I'll find out what the character's name
is. So the son is Ethan, right? And we see him at the beginning.
That was terrible.
As like the sensitive boy, and oh yeah, my father beats me, but you know he's trying his best. Type
Catherine.
Of Catherine, thank you. Julianne Moore's character's name is Catherine, and so one of the climaxes of the film is that it is Ethan who has killed Catherine, Julianne Moore's character. And it's because she is his birth mother and Gary Oldman's has been trying to like pay her off for years to like leave them alone. And I guess it's kind of shown very poorly, not really, that this is her latest attempt to like scrap her way back into his life or like get money or what. It's not a fully fleshed out idea.
No. And then we also find out that this isn't his first time murdering somebody.
Right.
Like the family moves to New York because the father's secretary was killed by the son.
Right.
And I still don't know why. Is it because he's obsessed with his father? Is he obsessed with killing women?
Absolutely. And that was the thing. It's like they show this like scene on the roof where it's raining and it's Anna and it's Ethan and they're just like kind of this like they're fighting and he like claws her in the face with like a garden hook thingy.
Oh.
And she's just like walked like screaming and like he's. It was just such a weird, like, why is he killing these women?
Right. And this is the other one that really bothered me.
Get it.
And I want to know if you felt this way, too.
Okay.
So in the beginning of the film, when you first meet Ethan's character.
Yeah.
I got the feeling that he was on the spectrum.
Yeah. He's.
And then. Yeah. By the end, when we find out he's actually murdered, it's gone.
Yeah.
Like, wasn't an act. Was it like I think
was
disturbed and I did not like that.
I think it follows that and they try to do it with David the Tennant too. It follows that trope in films, crime like thrillers and horror movies that they're showing like they're trying to portray that it's like, oh, it couldn't possibly be this person because they're so nice or they're so innocent.
Or it has to be this person because he's a criminal.
Right. Yeah. And so they do at the beginning with David, too, because he says, like, I'll take out your trash and I'll change those light bulbs. I'm trying to be the helpful tenant.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, I'm a criminal. And it's like, that's a shitty transition.
So
but
bad.
I think it's the same with Ethan, the kid, too, of like, oh, I'm just your neighbor. And yeah, life at home is kind of tough. But gosh, here's this candle. And then it's like, I kill women. And it's like, what the fuck? And so,
and it was out of nowhere because like you never expect it was him, which is like most of these movies do a good, like most like thrillers, like whodunit, they do a good job at like dropping hints of like who the actual killer is. Like one of my favorite movies of all time is Murder on the Orient.
Oh,
Express.
Dream of dreams.
And everyone I talk to is like, that movie's so boring. And I fucking love that. My mom, I was recently talking to my mom when we went on vacation, and she's like, that was a terrible movie.
I fell asleep.
And I was like, I've seen that movie so many times. I love it. And you have these scenes.
Are you and your mother speaking? I'm just kidding.
Barely. You have these scenes because in that, no, we're not going to spoil it because we might do that movie one day.
Oh,
you
it's
have
so good.
You have all these scenes with the movies where you actually, you can tell, like, by the end, like, a good whodunit, when you finally realize who did the murder, you're like, well, duh, I should have known that. You start connecting all right. the dots. You never see a scene where, like, Alistair, like, says, don't talk to my boy. You don't know about my boy, or my boy isn't this sweet, innocent kid mm-hmm. as you think, trying to defend himself, or, like, giving a hint of right. like, my son is not
right.
Is there something else about
it's
my
not
son?
Well,
by the time you get to the end, you're like, how the fuck? How?
Right.
Like, there's no connection.
Right.
There's no through line to connect you to the point that this kid has the potential to murder his mother, some random admin, and
who else knows?
Amy Adam.
Yeah. And now Amy Adams. Yeah, it was very, very poorly fleshed out. So that's one climax.
Yes, what's the next one?
The other climax is actually the more disappointing one because it's the one where we've seen it before. And again, can be done so well. And it went so poorly. And so, like we said earlier in this episode, we never see Anthony Mackie's character. We know it's her husband. We hear his voice because of the phone calls that have. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we know they're separated and they have a daughter who's, you know, 8 or 10 or something like that. Right. And so we see this scene towards the end where it's, you know, David, the downstairs neighbor, and it's the police. Everybody's in the room. The parents, Ethan is lurking in the corners. We actually find out about her family before she gets clawed in the face by Ethan.
Yes, that's a different time. Yes.
So this is the first quote unquote climax of the film, right? And then the one we just talked about with Ethan being the serial killer is the second one.
Yeah.
So we're in this big house, everybody's around, and she's kind of, Amy Adams is just kind of this like you can see her going into her own mind and being like, no, this is what happened. And she's trying to piece this together for herself. And so then we hear from the lady, the detective, the female detective, you know, she's talking about her family. Anna is and saying like my, you know, daughter and my blah, blah, blah. And then the female detective says, your family's dead.
Yeah. That.
And it was like, wah, wah.
Oh, actually, I kind of like that scene.
It's not
the only scene I really liked.
But the scene. Okay, so we find that out, and then we're transported into this scene.
Yeah,
we're driving in the wintertime. That's always foreshadowing. We know something shitty is going to happen. Daughter's in the back. Amy Adams is driving, and Anthony Mackie's character, what's his name? I don't even remember. is like, they're kind of
Edward Fox.
They're talking, and you can tell it's a very tense conversation. And then it's not said explicitly, but it becomes apparent that Anna has cheated on Edward, right?
Yes.
And she gets a phone call, and because he's basically like, I can't do this anymore, kind of a thing. And she said, oh, I thought we were gonna like not spoil Christmas and wait until the holidays were over. And he's like said something about like, whoever's like fucking the other person is the one that's at something like that.
Yeah.
So then the phone rings and then he's like, oh, I bet that's him. So it becomes a very apparent that she's cheated on her husband. Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The phone, she grabs it. He grabs it. It gets tumbled. She's trying to reach behind her seat for it, gets in a car accident, and her daughter and her husband die.
Right. And then you see her like, after the scene comes back, she like dismisses everybody and she's like, I'm so sorry, I didn't mean to do this. And then she kind of goes and she's walking around her house. You see like the actual car in her living room.
Yeah.
Like, and again, it's going back to this like, trippy, like, you know what I mean? Visual hallucination concept. I didn't think it was bad. That's why I wish the movie was weirder. That was my biggest complaint. It's like, I wish the movie was weirder. Like, if you're going to go there.
So boring.
Like, be weird as fuck. Like, I want to see more of those scenes where, like.
Because that was a good scene.
Yeah, it was actually a good scene where, like, that's where, like, probably, like, next thing I want to talk about is Amy Adams, because this show is about women.
For sure, for sure.
I want to spend a good chunk of talking about her. But like that was a scene where like it was beautifully shot. But probably one of the only scenes that was like actually beautifully shot.
Yeah.
The scenes when the movie was good is like when it was like weird. Like when it was like this hallucination is like
when she sees the car in her living room and she's reliving the accident.
The scene where she's like trying to reconnect, like, oh no, actually did this happen? No, this happened on a Tuesday. What today is? And the camera is like slowly panning on her. And you can see, and then all of a sudden you can start seeing blue,
right?
Which the movie plays with a lot of like blues and white and like these blacks, and you can
Dark colors.
Yeah, and you can start seeing like the snow, and so like that was shot beautifully.
Yeah, it was.
And that's the only time where I'm actually like, and Amy Adams is really connecting to the scene.
Yeah,
and you can see, you can actually physically see her brain working.
Right.
That's the only times where I actually enjoy the movie.
Well, and that's the thing that makes me so upset is that you have this really beautiful scene and something that could have unfolded into such a compelling and gripping thriller, whatever.
Yeah.
And it's just stuck in the middle of this crap.
So good to see when like we, in real life, we have all these moments and they're not as major, but you have all these moments when you're like trying to connect life and like re-visualize life and like remember things and like, and you actually realize how terrible or how great or terrible our minds are at like keeping memories or replay memories.
Can you trust your own mind?
Yeah. So it's beautiful to actually see her start realizing like, oh my God, this whole reality, I've been making these things up. I've been hallucinating. Right. So it was just disappointing. Amy Adams.
Can I say another thing about the ending we get into her? So the whole movie is kind of centered around this agoraphobia, right?
Yeah.
And there's that one point where she says, oh, I'm trying to leave the house with an umbrella because that was the suggestion of my therapist. And we see her doing that once the fake Jane is getting killed. She's like, I got to do something. I'm coming, Jane. Yeah. I'm coming, Jane. Hang on, Jane. And so she like has this umbrella and she's like literally blocking her view of the road. And then we see the headlights and it's this whole fucking disaster. I'm like, that's so, I don't think that mental health aspect was captured very well personally.
No.
Because I think agoraphobia, because it's different than depression and anxiety, it felt a little like, baiting to me.
Yeah.
Like this is interesting because it's different and that's it. And that's all we have to do.
No. And I wish they leaned into it more. Like wish there were so many moments where she was terrified and I felt like the movie, especially since it's, I don't know how this movie was a minute and 40. I thought they could have picked up the pace and I thought there could have been scenes where I wanted to feel just disoriented.
Yes.
And you didn't feel that. You did not feel that.
And so that's one scene, right? Like she can't go outside. She's so terrified, blah, 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 blah. And then at the end of the film, once we realize, okay, she has had a nervous breakdown and thinks that her, you know, husband and her daughter are still alive.
Yeah.
And then she gets clawed in the face by Ethan and then she kills him. And then she's in the hospital and she wakes up and then she's like, I know I can't stay here in this beautiful brownstone anymore. So she just packs her shit and
she's
gone. And she just walks out of the house. No fucking problem.
Yeah.
And I'm like, really?
Yeah. Like I would rather her see a scene where she still lived in the house and she's like, she's putting away the cell phone because she was very attached to her cell phone.
Yeah, she
was. The one little clue that I kind of did like is like her attachment to her cell phone was actually because that was the last attachment she had to her husband or child. So I kind of like that, but I would like to see her like put the cell phone away and then like open up the blinds or something. And you can actually see her get dressed and she's like slowly walking outside with an umbrella for the first time.
Yeah.
That would have been more impactful to me because I'm like, that's real. Like she's not going to move out of her life. She's still going to be attached to her husband. She's still going to be attached to the house, but it would have been nice to see her slowly like start to like the idea of her just like, well, I'm out this bitch.
Kick up my heels and go.
No, that's not real.
So that was my one thing. So now we can get into Amy Adams, but I had to bring that up before.
I think the problem with Amy Adams, I want to talk about Amy Adams and then I want to talk about what the real problem with this movie is.
Okay, because I would like to say before you talk about Amy Adams, we like Amy Adams. We did a whole episode on her.
Yeah, I like Amy Adams in this film. I don't think she's bad. I don't think she's one of those actresses. I don't think she can do a terrible job.
No, she's never bad.
She's never bad. She does the job that's assigned to her. I think my issue with her is like, first of all, I want to like, how the hell did they get all these actors on this movie?
I don't know.
Because like,
do you think it's like, oh, I didn't work in 2020 because of the pandemic, so I got to like pay my mortgage?
Well, no,
because
this has had to been happening. Like the conversations for this movie had to happen like early 2020, maybe even 2019.
It just doesn't make sense to
me. Just doesn't make sense that it had all these amazing actors, especially Amy Adams at the helm. You know what I mean? I don't think she does a bad job. I think she looks a mess.
Yeah.
And I think she
looks very similar to her character in Sharp Objects.
Oh, does she? I haven't seen that yet.
Same kind of like a little bloaty, kind of like with the alcohol problem and like no makeup. She looks very similar.
She looks a mess. And like her acting is a little bit of a mess. Like it's just this like disorient and not in an interesting way. It's just like certain choices she made and how she kind of acted. She was just very short and curt in areas where I'm just like, I wish she was a little bit more warm, especially with Ethan. I wish she was a lot more warm and inviting. I wish to her, her only interaction of Julianne Moore's character, what was her name? Catherine, when she meets her on Halloween. I wish there was a better transition from like, I distrust you, why are you in my home, into this like connection. There were just all these scenes where I'm just like, I can't buy it. And especially when she's talking to her husband, like, I wish there were more scenes where I could invest in this relationship with her husband. I could invest in her. And I want to root for her. At the end, I was just like, I don't even know this woman.
Well, it was so disappointing because she doesn't ever do a bad job. And we love her. She's such a good actress. Well,
and I think it's important that you want to like this character. Like, you want, like, especially if you look at the character, you have this rich woman living in this beautiful home who can't. And like, I believe in agoraphobia. I'm not going to deny that people, it's not real. But like, I think it's important for when we talk about a disease that isn't popular within the, you know, I mean, the larger realm of society. And it's easy to kind of dismiss as like, okay, like, really, you can't leave out your house. When you have a character who lives in this gorgeous ass house, like, you want them to be likable. You want to root for them. And I just didn't root for them.
While I'm thinking about it, this thought just came to me along the lines of agoraphobia. Never in the movie. So like, obviously the reason that she's agoraphobic is because she's had this trauma of basically being in a car accident where she kills her husband and her daughter, but doesn't remember it. But as a viewer, it's never like, why? Like, and it's like, it's referenced like, okay, you haven't always been this way because you've been sent like the last 10 months.
Yeah.
And so as the audience member, you're like, well, what the fuck was 10 months ago?
Yeah.
That is so underdeveloped in the film.
It is.
It is never like this palpable tension of like, oh my God, why is she a agoraphobic? Like, I fucking forgot. It was so.
You just thought she was a skittish kind of woman.
And she's unlikable and she's unfriendly.
She is. Her tenant, David, who's the only person who's like her connection to the outside world.
Yeah.
Like, you never get the sense of like she's her therapist. Like, and I get it. Like, she has this anxiety about like everyone is, you know what I mean, out to get her, which I can understand. Totally. But she never could connect. Like, there's a difference between like, I can't go outside and like, I can't connect to the outside world.
Yeah.
Like, I can't connect to people. And you never got, and then you're like, well, why is she connected to this, you know what I mean, this Catherine character? What was so special about her? Yeah. So it's just this bizarre film.
Super and bizarre.
It leads me to this concept of like, who's to blame? And I can't.
For this bad movie.
Yeah. And I can't blame the actors because they're too good.
It's a bunch of really good actors.
And I honestly feel like it has to be the director.
Yeah.
Has to be the writer, screenwriter.
Yeah.
And I feel like one thing we have not talked about, because I don't think we've had an opportunity, is like, we talked a little bit about pre-production when we talked about Mommy Dearest. We did a huge dialogue about like prior to the movie being made. And we talk a lot about like, we review a lot of like books that were turned into movies. Mm-hmm. This movie was based off a book.
Yeah, we do a lot of adaptations.
Yeah, so a lot about adaptations. We talk about like a lot happening during the movie. So like, what was the set like? What was the screenplay like? We don't talk a lot about post-productions. So I did some research and I guess this movie was a shit show. Like, post-production was like, we gotta fix this shit because this movie tested so poorly.
Well, so no kidding.
They had to hire another individual to try and fix this film because it was that bad. So now
to like re-edit
to edit it. because it was so bad. So now I'm looking at it, and now with that piece of information, I'm like, holy shit, what does this movie look like? Like, really, they hired Julianne Moore for one scene?
Literally.
Mackie was in the scene for like one scene. Like, I can't believe that they hired this incredible cast, and two of the actors were in it for less than 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Less than maybe 15 minutes.
And actors that are A-list, and one of them being incredibly relevant, Anthony Mackie.
Yeah, and you, with Julianne the Marvel Moore, stuff. She's like been, has she won an Oscar?
Yes.
Won an Oscar, nominated for Oscars.
She's a queen.
She's a queen. Like, you got it. You're telling me, like, you.
I was so disappointed in that.
Yeah.
So, and I was like, you're telling me that Jennifer Jason Leigh is getting more screen time than Julianne Moore?
Absolutely.
No, absolutely not.
And Jennifer Jason Leigh's character was still trash. Like, they could hire
She didn't even say anything.
No, they could hire some no-name actress to play that part.
And yeah, and it was very much like, I'm taking this actress and making her look as upper Manhattan as I can.
Yeah.
It looked so just fake.
Yeah.
And not good.
Yeah, the whole stylistic choices of this movie was just really bad. The only thing I really like was like those, again, like I said, those really weird scenes. There were some really cool, interesting, weird scenes, which I'm like, I wish they leaned more into it. I wish they really, like, we just talked about, we need to talk about Kevin. And that movie did such a better job at using an unreliable narrator to tell a story. And I'm like, this movie fails at it. Like,
I felt
it could have been a lot more disoriented. I felt like they could have jumped timelines a lot better.
Oh, yeah.
It was too sequential. Like, it was like you saw it at what every day was. And like, I'm like, that doesn't matter to me. Like, I don't need to know what day it is. Yeah. I need to feel like time and space is this like object that is not relative to me, because it's not relative to her.
Right.
If you lived in your house 24/7, you know what I mean? Your bills are being paid for magically. We don't know how. You know what I mean? And like,
probably a life insurance policy because your husband's dead.
Yeah. You are so obsessed with like your home. Like, you're obsessed with like, you're hallucinating, you're on drugs, you're drinking. Like, what the fuck? You don't know what day it is. So why do I need to know as a watcher?
Fascinating.
I don't need to know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's so many choices. Yeah. I'm like, you're doing this for no reason. The only thing I enjoyed about this movie is the scenery.
Yeah.
The set. And I will add this piece to it. This movie as a stage play would have been incredible.
Okay. Thank you so much for bringing that up. I think, like, even as a novel, not interested. A short story, very interested.
I'd be interested to read this as a novel.
A play, very interested.
I would read, if this was written like letters or something.
Yeah, the way it was told.
It was just awful.
I was looking at it like, this would be a great short story because.
Yeah, a short story would be interesting.
And so it just came to me now. I think the reason why, totally switching gears. So we see her for the entire week in the same outfit.
Pretty much.
Right? She's just kind of frumpy. She's wearing the bathrobe with this nightgown of sorts, muumuu situation. And there's scenes where she's talking to her husband, which is fake, obviously it's in her mind, about her conversations with the therapist. The therapist, who's also the writer, right, is uncredited. And that's because the character doesn't really exist, in my opinion. Because he comes to her house.
Oh, so you think she's just therapizing herself?
I think she's therapizing herself. But well, in a sense, she has these medications, right? And obviously you can't get that without going to see a psychiatrist. But there's a scene where she's talking to her therapist, like in a really, not in a way I would ever speak to a therapist, because she's like, oh, fuck you. You know, remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
What is she wearing in that scene?
I can't remember.
She's wearing.
Oh, she's wearing dress clothes.
She's wearing dress clothes and nice shoes, because that scene never fucking happened.
Oh,
that's my perception. That never happened. She is talking to herself like a therapist.
Yeah.
And she got, maybe she was wearing those clothes and pretending like that was happening. That,
or maybe the scene happened like it was like in his office, like during, before she like locked herself in the house.
I mean, but the scene takes place in her house.
Yeah, I don't know. That scene didn't feel like it was in the house, though, to me.
Oh, okay. And maybe it was earlier, but either...
I don't know, but I like that concept. But I wish there was more scenes like that.
But exactly, but we'll never know if that was simply a poor writing choice.
Right.
And that was a poor scene placed randomly, or if that was one of a really, really good scene. Yeah. We'll never know.
That's the thing, is just like, because it was so tied to the house, which I understand, agoraphobia, you can't do too much, but like,
They could have done so much
where like time and place were so dissolved. And again, that's why I feel like if this as a stage play would have been so much more successful because of the nature of the environment. Absolutely. Like it's just attached to one place and time. Like I think this as a stage play would have been so much more interesting.
Because I think of that movie they turned into... it was a play they turned into a movie called American Son, and it was with Kerry Washington mm-hmm. and Stephen Pascal, and it all takes place in that room of the police station.
Yeah, or hospital or something.
They're in the police station. Yeah.
And I need to watch that.
Waiting. It's a really, it's, I mean, Kerry Washington is really good in it, of course. She is good in it.
Is she?
Yeah, she is good in it.
I've seen some memes.
Have you?
About her lip. We'll have to talk about it. In the next episode, we'll have to talk about Kerry Washington's lip.
Oh, okay. Great.
Like, people hate it.
Oh, I don't. I think she's very beautiful, though.
But her lip is terrible.
I don't want to look at it because now I'll never unsee it.
But anyway,
it's like
yes.
when you find out about Megan Fox's toe thumbs or whatever. And you can never unsee it. But yeah, so overall, very disappointed. The thing is like the story is, especially when it's an adaptation, the story is literally fucking written for you.
And I heard there was like a lot of differences between the book and the novel in this movie.
I'd be interested. So here's what we need to do. We need to, in all of our free time, read the book. Really what we need to do is watch August Osage County again. We can definitely make that our next movie. Because like now I'm thinking, is it really as good? Because this was so bad.
Another movie I want us to watch to kind of compare to this film. And it's another one. It's a weird movie. And I don't know if you've seen it yet. It's a very weird movie. I need to rewatch it. It's called I'm Thinking About Ending Things. Have you seen it?
I was going to bring that movie up. Seth and I watched it. It was fucking weird.
Yeah.
Very good. But in the sense of scenery.
Yeah, it's very similar,
right? A chef's kiss. Yeah. And very similar.
Very. That movie. I think where this movie was too grounded. I feel if the only critique I had about I'm Thinking About Ending Things, it wasn't grounded enough. Just like if it just needed a smidge more of like reality to me. Cause like by the, I was like,
just a smidge. Yeah. Though.
So like those movies, if they could have traded some, like a little bit of vibes, I think
amazing
a lot
point.
More on this movie,
Shit.
But I'm Thinking About Ending Things reminded me. So I got the same sense of like time and, you know, and place were just so dissolved. And I wish the movie had a little bit more of it. Like, you know what I mean? Right. Can you imagine if like the reality is like she's been in the house for years or
exactly.
Or like the murder happened like weeks ago, or like,
right.
Or she always knew who Jane Russell was, or like Allison Russell was like the man she cheated on or something. You know what I mean?
I wish that
was the one thing that pissed me off. I'm like, I want to know who she was cheating on. There were so many elements that were dropped and I wish they could connect the dots a little bit more. Because as short as the movie was, it felt fucking long. And like, if you're going to make a movie feel that long, like, either, like, give me a reason. Like, you better cram some shit in there or pick up the pace.
Well, because all of it was so unnecessary. Yeah. But you're so right. As you were saying earlier about this particular movie of we needed some more weirdness. Like, or just in the sense of, like, you know, the scene where we see the car in the living room type of thing.
Yeah.
When in the film I'm Thinking About Ending Things, that is all that movie is a bunch of, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
But,
Yeah. My only other complaint was this, like, as far as folk, like, if you're going to use a female character.
Yeah.
With themes that we've seen before, I want to experience what it feels like. I want to have the woman's experience. I want a femme experience. Yeah. And to me, you could have put a man in there.
Yeah.
And I want to.
Yeah.
A woman's experience and dealing with those kind of trauma and that those kind of issues is going to feel different.
Right.
I think it needed to feel grounded within, like, what does it feel like to be a woman who's not believed, who is a professional, who has to leave her work, who's lost her child as a mother, who's cheated on their husband and who's like connect. Like, I needed more of those moments to feel like this is what it feels like to have all this loss as a woman and not just like as a human being.
Right.
There could have been so many more beautiful moments, or I think with an actress like Amy Adams could have just like created gorgeous moments.
And it didn't, we got to wrap up, but
it is. It but didn't like, happen. Listen, people, I give this movie, like, now I'm talking about it.
Pass.
I give it a 5. I don't give it a 4.
Pass.
Pass it.
You don't need to watch it.
You don't need to see it. We did your job for you.
You're welcome. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Again, like we said last episode, stay cool.
Yeah, stay cool.
Please, people in the Pacific Northwest, and especially here in Idaho, I know y'all left some fireworks on Independence Day, 4th of July, whatever you like to call it, oppressor days for some of us. Mm. Please do not shoot them up at Table Rock. Please make sure you have a bucket. I do not want to see my city burn down again. Please be cognizant of it. It is hot as hell, and we could start a wildfire like that.
And yeah, and if it's like for the sake of patriotism, just go fuck yourself and don't do it.
Do it on your phone or something, but like, it's too hot. Let's not burn the city down. Yeah. Let's like be conscious of,
shoot yourself out of a cannon.
Let's
if you
think
really
about Mother
to.
Earth and be kind to her. Do yes, not please. Start any fires. You please. Can prevent forest fires.
Yes, you can smoke.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Hi, this is Erin.
And this is Colin.
And you've been listening to Let's Hear It for the Girls. It's always a great time at Speak Studios in Boise, Idaho, and we hope you enjoy learning about the girls.
Now listen, you better like, subscribe, and review us on all major platforms. We'll see you next time.
And thanks for listening. Thank you.